Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. Sitting in for Gloria Nussbaum, I'm your host, David Johnson, and my guest is Gloria Nussbaum. Welcome, Gloria. I am so happy you agreed to do this.
Thank you, Dave. I'm looking forward to this.
So you start all of your COVID Chronicles conversations at the beginning. And from being a faithful COVID Chronicles listener, I know that you're not a native Oregonian. So can you tell us where you were born and where you grew up?
I can. I was actually born in Buffalo, New York, which, despite what many people think, is not in upstate New York. It is in Western New York. And anyone who hangs out with me for any length of time knows that that's important. While I was born in the city of Buffalo, I never lived there. My parents lived in a small town called Clarence Center for the first 6 years of my life. And then my father was called to be the pastor of a little Mennonite congregation southeast of Buffalo. And that little town is called Arcade, New York. And that is what I consider my hometown. We moved there in the summer after I turned 6 years old. I went to kindergarten in the Clarence Center area, but then the whole rest of my education was not only in the same town, it was in the actual same building from first grade to senior.
How many kids were in the school? Was it a pretty small school?
My graduating class had about 100 kids in it, and so I think that was kind of pretty standard throughout my years of education.
So how many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in within the family?
I have three siblings. I have an older sister whose birthday was yesterday. We're about 18 months apart. I'm number two, and then there's a six-year gap, and then my younger sister. And then 2 years later, my brother, which is, of course, the one that we'd waited for our whole lives.
You often ask your guests whether or not they wish they had a brother or sister, depending on if it was all girls or all boys. What were you most excited about having a little brother?
I think just the idea of having a brother. And by the time he came along, I was 8 years old. In fact, his birthday's in just a couple of days. So from the oldest to the youngest, within 5 days, we're exactly 10 years for all four of us.
Oh, wow.
It just felt like it would be fun to have someone of the other gender. And all of my siblings are wonderful.
So today is the day we're having this conversation is the first day of school in Portland. So I'm curious, you told us a little bit about the size of the school that you went to, but I'm wondering about what school was like and if you have any good first day of school memories.
The reality is that I don't have a very good memory, which is pretty funny in light of the work that I do, but I don't have specific first day of school memories except that I don't think my parents made it a big point to always take our picture that day. Secondly, we always wore dresses and skirts to school, I think possibly even through high school. And so the first day of school, like we dressed up. We dressed up like we were going to church. I think we often got new dresses, and I always lived in town, so we always walked to school. In fact, the first house that I lived in until I think my junior high years was literally about a block and a half from school. We could see the school parking lot from our front windows. As I recall, I liked school. I made friends relatively easily. I was a preacher's kid, and I always knew that. And being a Mennonite in an area where people weren't really familiar too much with what Mennonites were, I think there was always just a little piece of my dad's recommendation or his reminder, remember who you are.
Mm. Do you remember that being kind of a burden? Or was that something that you felt like some responsibility that you were just proud to be that kind of, to have that kind of pressure, I guess?
I don't think I can say I was proud. It was just, I guess in some ways it was a little bit of a burden. As I got older and there would be, say, dancing in gym class, even just square dancing, I would have a note from my parents that said, please excuse Gloria from dancing in gym class. And I didn't like that. I couldn't understand why I couldn't dance, and it always looked like so much fun. Mm-hmm. So there, I think it was more of a bit of a burden than anything, that I just was aware of it, always aware of it.
So what was family like for you during the fall? We're about to, it's starting to get cool outside. Are there any fall traditions that you had that you looked forward to?
Not really. My father, while he was the pastor of Arcade Mennonite Church, that church never fully financially supported him or our family. And so his other job was that he was a carpenter, and he was fabulous. He was an artist with wood, as is my brother. At one point later in life, it was Leroy Yoder and Son Construction. And the fact that he always had work to do, we just never went anywhere, almost never went anywhere. I remember one vacation, real vacation in all of my growing up years. We would sometimes in the summer maybe spend a week or so in Ohio with grandparents and cousins, but we never really had a vacation of any kind that I can remember other than just this one time when my dad was the camp counselor at a camp up in Canada. So fall traditions, no, not really.
So your maiden name is Yoder and your father was a pastor of a Mennonite church. Have you always attended Mennonite churches?
Well, mostly. Let me also say that my mother was a Yoder before she got married. And so I am a double Yoder. All of my grandparents are Yoders. I have Yoder cousins on both sides. And while we're talking about my name, let me just say that when I met Harold and we decided to get married, one of the questions was, what was I going to do with my last name? Because obviously, women often change their last name. The other complicating factor about that was that at the time that I met Harold and we got engaged, I was working in radio broadcasting in Phoenix, Arizona, and I was on the air and I was known as Gloria Yoder. So there was this extra piece for me that I was Gloria Yoder, and what was I going to do about this last name? What I finally decided was that it just makes life easier if we both have the same last name. And so I tell people and I tell him that my wedding gift to him was taking his last name. Let me just hasten to add that there was never any pressure from him to do so, but it was something that I mulled over for quite a while when I knew that I was going to be marrying him. And then later on, I mean, I decided way down the road, and if you know me on Facebook, I'm Gloria Yoder Nussbaum, because that name matters to me. And it was kind of my way of saying, I'm still Gloria Yoder. I just added another name.
So I'm curious about how your relationship with being a Mennonite has changed as you've over the course of your life and how it's evolved. Like you mentioned that some of the stuff in school was a little hard to do socially. I'm curious how that has changed now that you're still obviously a Mennonite here in Portland.
Yeah. So growing up, I went to first to Clarence Center Mennonite Church and then to Arcade Mennonite Church. Was that Arcade Mennonite Church basically all of my growing up years until, because about the time that when I was like probably a sophomore in high school, our church closed because my dad was doing some things outside of his marriage that weren't exactly acceptable. And as a result, that little church, and it had never been a very big church. It had always been, there were some families who were originally Mennonites who had gone to Arcade and asked him to come and be the pastor. We were the pastor's family, so we always got there early and we left late and we cleaned the building. And my mom was the song leader and my dad was the preacher, and we pretty much, we were always there. But when the church closed, we started going to the United Church of Christ Congregational Church in our little town of Arcade, and actually went there for, as I can recall, the last 2 years that I was in high school, and then I went away to college. And when I would come home, we would go back to that church because the other one was gone. And then as I made my different moves around the country, most of the time I went to Mennonite churches. And let me just say that being a Mennonite is really important to me. I realize that when people ask me about my religion, the first thing I say is that I'm a Mennonite. I say that before I say that I'm a Christian or a follower of Jesus. That's the first thing that I say. Why? That's a really good question. I think a big piece of it is that it's who I am. It's like it's in my DNA, and I cherish that part of my heritage. I am also the only Mennonite left in my immediate family. My parents are both gone, but even before then, my dad died a Unitarian. My mom was a Methodist, and my siblings, some are going to various churches and some aren't involved at all. But I'm the Mennonite because it matters to me. I love the peace stance. I love the idea of community. I feel like I've been fortunate to attend churches that are open to new ideas. And the way I grew up was the way I grew up, but that's not the same church that I have attended for the last probably 30, 40 years, so to speak.
Thank you. That's I love that story. That was wonderful. So I'm going to move on to school. So listeners of the podcast might know that you were an English major in college. When and how did that interest begin to spark in your life?
When I was growing up, well, first of all, there weren't a lot of options for women. So my mother decided that my older sister would be a school teacher and that I would be a nurse. Those were sort of the two major ones. Neither of my parents, I'm not even sure if they graduated from high school. I realized years later that my siblings and I were the first generation college students, just like so many are. Finally hit me one day that was me too. But when I was a senior in high school, I started to really like my English teacher. It was interesting. I liked the things we're reading. I liked her. And it was like, maybe there's something besides nursing in life. And then as I thought about nursing, and I just told someone this story recently, nurses spend all their time with sick people. Like, why would I do that? There are a lot of well people out there that I could spend my time with. Why would I be a nurse and hang out with sick people? So by the time I got to college, and I went to Goshen College in Goshen, Indiana, it's the only college that I applied to, and it's probably the only college that would have accepted me. I am a straight C student, and you know, C students are okay. They still make it in life, despite what some people might think. But when I got there, I really did not know what I wanted to major in. But I had to, of course, declare by the end of my sophomore year. And what it kind of boiled down to was, because I was starting to be interested in psychology. I was taking some psychology classes, and I really liked those. But when I actually had to pick my major, I said to myself, you know what? You like the English profs a lot better than you like the psychology profs. Let's just go with English. And I might quickly add, I never had any intention of being a teacher. So what do you do with an English degree? I didn't have a clue. I'm still not sure. But as I say, you can be a teacher and not be able to spell, which I cannot do either. But you cannot be an English teacher and not be able to spell. So that kind of helped me to make the decision that that wasn't going to happen. So what did happen in college was that I finally got the nerve, and people who've gone to Goshen will know where this is. The college radio station, WGCS, is up a flight of stairs in what used to be the Union Building. It took me 3 years to get up the guts to walk up that flight of stairs, even though I had been in love with radio since like day one. I bought myself a transistor radio, first thing I ever bought myself with my allowance and my babysitting money. So when I got to WGCS, it was like, oh, wow. Like, this is really where I want to be. Behind the scenes is even better than listening to the radio.
What was it about radio that made you fall in love with it?
You know what? I always wanted to be a star. I just always wanted to be a star. And I wasn't going to make it in the movies. And so, you know, maybe I think true confession, it's an ego thing. When you're on the radio, nobody sees you, but they may know who you are. They hear your voice. You get to play music. You get to read the news. You get, I don't know. It was just, I think, being out there in some strange way.
So when you started at the college radio station, did you start with the intention of being on the air? And did you do that right away?
Yeah, it was pretty easy to get on the air at that little station at that point. It wasn't the big thing that it is now where it wins all the awards in Indiana. It was just a little local radio station. Yeah, I was on the air, I think, fairly soon.
What kind of stuff did you do on the air? Did you play music? Did you read news? What was that program like?
I think I was just kind of an announcer. I don't exactly remember. I did have access to the records. And actually, I have some contraband here in my house as we speak. There was an Elvis Presley record that they were never going to play on WGCS. So I took it out of its misery and brought it home. And it's been happily residing here with me for many decades. Yeah, just, I don't know, just the whole idea of even the programming, just being with the people. It was just fun. It was just fun. And when I was at Goshen, they didn't have a communications major. It started the year after I graduated. So like the closest I could get to it was my English degree. And I've always said that if I had just been there like a year later, I definitely would have gone for a communications degree. And I also worked on the college newspaper. Again, not sure why. It was just a fun thing. And I liked the people and yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you worked at a radio station in Arizona for a while. Was that your next move after college, or were there some steps along the way?
There was a return to Arcade, New York after I graduated. So I graduated with my BA in English without having done any student teaching because I had no intention of teaching. And the question always is, you know, what do you do with an English degree? And the answer is, well, whatever you can figure out to do with it. And I have to say, like so many of the other people that I've interviewed on COVID Chronicles and in my business, there are a lot of us who didn't have a clue what we were going to do with that four-year degree. It wasn't like we went because we had a specific thing in mind that when we got out, we were going to do it. We just got the degree because, well, we got the degree. I went back home and moved back into the house. By then, my parents had, I'm trying to think, had they split up by then? Not quite. No, they hadn't. And actually got a job at the local factory, the Motorola factory, soldering rotors for about 6-8 months. And then when I quit that job, there was another little factory in Arcade called Monroe Games, where we put little games together all day. And I went and worked there. So that was like the middle of 1972 that I graduated from college. And by the fall of 73, yeah, about a year and a half, my parents had split up and my two younger siblings were still at home. My older sister was married, living in Indiana. And I decided that it was just time to get out of Dodge. One of the things about Arcade, New York is that it's in the snow belt of New York State. And growing up in snow is wonderful. But when I got to the point where in order to do anything, I was going to have to drive in snow, that in addition to the havoc that was being wreaked into my home with the split up of my parents, which absolutely needed to happen, I might add. It was like, I'm out of here. So where am I going to go? What am I going to do? I had relatives in the Phoenix, Arizona area, and I also had relatives in California. So I told my relatives, my dad's sister and family in Arizona, I would really like to come to Phoenix and just see how I do there. And if that doesn't work out, then I'm just going to keep going west. I'm going to go to California and see what I find there. My aunt and uncle, bless their hearts, said, come on out. It's fine. We're here. If you need us, we're here. So I, on January 1st, 1974, my dad and I got into my little blue Maverick. We took the southern route through the ice storm that hit that January in the midst of the gas shortage. People who are my age will know that that was right in the middle of the major gas shortage. We drove to Phoenix, Arizona in about 4 days. And I had never been further west than Chicago. I had been there when I was in college. I just made some visits. And we drove into Phoenix late one evening. I stayed that night at my aunt and uncle's house. They had found me a place to live with some Mennonite women who had a house where they had an open bedroom. And the next day I moved into that house and I never looked back.
So you moved from the snow belt to the desert. What was that transition like for you?
Wonderful. It was wonderful because I seriously could not drive in snow. Like, I just couldn't drive in snow. At least my brain told me that I couldn't. And I say that Phoenix is where I became Gloria. Within 2 weeks, I had a job at the local NPR station. I was there for 6 months, and then they ran out of money, you know, last hired, first fired. So I lost that job, but then within a couple of weeks, I got another job. I worked at 3 or 4 radio stations, and one of them was KHEP, AM-FM. The AM was Christian, religious, and the FM was classical. And they were both in this tiny little building. So I kindly got to work at both. So on the AM, so when I got to that station, I ran the board. I was an announcer, and we had a lot of prepackaged programs. And so I would run those, you know, reel-to-reel tapes, queuing them up. But on the FM station, occasionally I got to voice commercials, which were very fun to make because there were some guys there that were just totally crazy and so creative. But then at some point in that whole situation, I got my own radio show, which was called The Best from Broadway. It ran on Saturday nights and it was pre-recorded on a real big reel-to-reel. And I would take a musical and tell the story and then play the songs where they fit in the story. And it was an hour-long program. I did that for some time. And then people know I rolled down a mountain in a car and crushed my right ankle and broke my right foot. And then all that stuff happened when I was at KHEP. Later on, I got another gig at a local rock station where I was reading the news. I lasted there 2 or 3 weeks, I think, and realized this is not going to work. And so on April 1st, 1976, I started at KNIX AM and FM, which was the biggest country station in Arizona, owned by country singer Buck Owens. And I was there for about 7 years or something like that. And there, I was the traffic manager, which is not as exciting as it sounds. It's the person who schedules the commercials. But at some point later on in that whole situation, I got another show, a public affairs show called Collage, where I was interviewing people, whoever happened to be coming through on a book tour or whatever. And I did that until the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, decided that we no longer needed to have any public affairs programming. And the show that I had recorded for that week never played because when they could go to just all country music, like, that's what they did. I mean, they just didn't even take that silly little half hour. They just filled it up with music. But some of the time during that, I was still doing Best from Broadway as well, just for free, just because I have an ego.
Who were some of the people that you interviewed for your interview show?
The most famous one was Vincent Bugliosi, and he was the prosecuting attorney for the Manson clan. Okay. So he was kind of my one claim to fame. I couldn't really name too many others.
You said that you became Gloria when you moved to Phoenix. What does that mean for you? Like, how do you feel like you changed and sort of blossomed when you landed in Phoenix?
I felt like there was nobody hovering over me, or there was no one. Maybe a better way to say it is that there was no specific person to whom I was accountable except me. And so, yeah, so I explored life. I probably did a lot of the things that many kids do in either high school or college that I didn't do until I was there just being me. And to my aunt and uncle's great, great credit, I always knew they were there, but they never hovered. They never, ever, you know, checked in to say, we hope you're doing the right thing or anything like that. They were wonderful. They were so awesome about that. I think I became the person that I was meant to be. I was a little shy, quiet little thing. The thing in the senior yearbook in high school underneath my picture was, quietness is her nature, success is her goal. And people who know me now go, what? And that's it. That happened in Phoenix just because I was in my early 20s and the world was my oyster. And I was working in a business that I loved being in.
So at some point you made your way up to Portland. Can you take us on that journey and what brought you to Portland?
So I was in Phoenix for 10 years. About 2 years before I left, a young man came to my church and he was going to Arizona State University working on his master's in piano pedagogy. We met in the pink Sunday school room, not unlike the office in which I am sitting. And when he asked me to marry him, I knew that that would mean that we were leaving Phoenix because he was just there temporarily to get his degree. And then he didn't really know what was happening next. But I knew by the time he asked me to marry him that we were going to leave Phoenix. And the other thing was that he had a daughter who was 11 years old when we got married. And I never particularly cared whether or not I had my own kids. So this was working out great for me. He applied to Mennonite Central Committee when he saw an opening for a piano teacher in Appalachia. And they said, your wife has to apply to MCC too, Mennonite Central Committee. Long story short, we ended up in Miami, Florida for 2 years as volunteers. I worked at Church World Service Immigration Refugee Program in Little Havana in downtown Miami. And Harold can tell you what he did if we ever get him to do one of these interviews. We were there for 2 years, and then Harold was invited to the headquarters of Mennonite Central Committee in Akron, Pennsylvania. And he went there in the personnel department on our long trip to Akron, which we went all around the country, kind of closing up things, selling the house in Arizona, all that good stuff. I got a job as the administrative assistant in the Africa department. And we were in Akron, Pennsylvania for 12 years. Most of that time I was at MCC. There was a little break in there, but for the most part, MCC. And MCC is the kind of organization that says, you shouldn't stay with us forever. You should come for a couple of years. And after 12 years at headquarters and two as volunteers, we were like, maybe it's time to go. By that time, our daughter had gotten married and moved around the country somewhat, but ended up at that time when we decided it was maybe time to make a move in Beaverton, Oregon. We said to her, she had two children at the time, we're thinking about moving to Portland, is that okay? And everybody said, yeah, that'd be great. So we did. So that's what brought us to Oregon. And we have been here for almost 23 and a half years. We came in April of 1998. Two grandkids were here when we came. There are now four more, all in the same family. So we have six grandchildren from age 31 to 13. And they live 6 miles from us in Beaverton. That's why we're in Beaverton.
So did you work out of the house when you moved to Portland?
No, neither one of us had jobs, so we had to find something to do. I first got a job with the American Blimp Corporation. Rudy, who used to go to Portland Mennonite, was working there and he hired me. And I was there about 6 months. Then I got a job at Reedwood Friends Church in the office, and I ran the church office there for several years. And then on September 1, 2001, yes, today, I started my business, Reel to Reel Recording Personal Stories. So this is kind of a momentous day for me.
That's a fantastic segue, because I wanted to ask you about being a personal historian and the origin story of Reel to Reel. And if we have time, maybe what that means for you to do the work you do as a personal historian.
So I had been looking for something to do with a tape recorder and talking to people for years and years and years and years. And I could not figure out what that might look like. And so in December of 2000, Harold bought me a really nice cassette tape recorder, because that's what we were using at that point. And he said, here's the recorder. Now figure out what you're going to do with it. In January of 2001, I was at the gym one day after work, just totally fed up with my job at Reedwood Friends. I grabbed an old Good Housekeeping magazine. It was probably about 18 months old, as magazines are at places like the gym. I grabbed that magazine and started pedaling away on my stationary bike, and I was flipping through it, and there was a half page article that said, she takes her tape recorder, goes to your home and records your story. And I just went crazy. I'm like, what? It's called personal history. There's something called the Association of Personal Historians. Long story short, I still have the page of that magazine that I ripped out, even though I'm not prone to stealing, and came home, figured out a way to get in touch with the Association of Personal Historians. And Harold said a few months later, if this is what you want to do, figure it out. We'll make it work. We'll figure it out, make it work. And that's what I did. So I quit my job at the church in probably August of that year. And I do consider September 1 the beginning of my business. Sadly, the Association of Personal Historians died a couple of years ago. I was an avid member. I went to absolutely every conference there ever was all over the country. You'll note that this is only a few days before the September 11. If you're thinking clearly about what year this was, there was an Association of Personal Historians meeting in Tampa, Florida, I think in October or November of that year. And I went, to every single conference until it died a couple of years ago. What I discovered about personal history was that almost every personal historian that I met was working in either books or video. And I knew from day one that if I did this work the way I wanted to do it was, guess what? Radio, audio. It's a long, complicated story, but I decided to work in audio. I was told that I could, if that was my heart's desire, just figure out how to make it work by a wonderful colleague. And that's what I did. I just figured it out. I literally figured out how to do this work in audio. And I am still one of the very few personal historians whose finished product is, like, as I say, a talking book in the voice of your loved one. I figured out how to interview. I mean, I had done a little bit of interviewing before, but I figured out how to do that for audio, which is different than it is if you're doing for books. And I figured out how to make my finished products, which have evolved from cassettes to CDs and now to flash drives. And I have the best job in the whole world.
I probably should have asked this at the beginning of our conversation, but what have you learned about what makes for a good audio interview?
Shutting up. And people who know me know that that's not a forte of mine, but I know how to do that when I'm working. You ask the question and then you stop. And just wait for the answer. And especially when you're working in audio, you don't want to quote unquote step on the other person, because while in a normal conversation, we're used to stepping on each other all over the place when we're talking, and our ears and our brains can do that well, if you're just listening to something, then it's hard. It's really hard when you're stepping on each other. And that's the tricky part, is to wait long enough and not wait too long.
Do you know how many personal stories you've collected over the 20 years you've been doing this?
I said some years ago that I'd done several hundred. I'm not sure if that's completely true, but I'm sure they're, yeah, it's probably pretty close.
So when you moved to Portland, you said 23 years ago, did you start attending PMC right away?
We did. We were actually in touch with the pastor at PMC before we ever came out, because we were pretty sure that's where we were going to go. There were several other English-speaking Mennonite churches in the area at that point, but especially when we ended up in Beaverton, even just driving into Portland, the church is a little distance, and the others were further away, further east. So yeah, we really never gave it a thought. We never really went anywhere else.
I'm curious how you've seen the church change over that time.
Portland Mennonite has always felt comfortable to me. I don't know if that's a good thing in a church or not, but I like it. I like the fact that things are not set in stone at Portland Mennonite, that we can explore things, that there are, I mean, there are people sort of up and down the whole spectrum of what it means to be a Christian, what it means to be a Mennonite. And I just feel like I've evolved sort of along with the church. I really like where we're at right now, except that, of course, we can't meet totally in person. That's the biggest challenge right now, and can't wait for that to change. But it aligns with what's important to me. Maybe that's a good way to put it. The peace stance is really, really important to me. Community, friendships is important to me. I don't totally have to agree with you, and I can still worship with you. I know some people say, you know, I'm not going to join the church. Like, I'll be happy to just keep attending for however long I feel like it. But for me, it's important. It was and is important to join the church, because that says to me that this is a group of people with whom I have chosen to journey on this faith journey, on this journey of life. These are the people that I want to be a part of. And it's important to me to just hitch my wagon to that caravan.
I think that maybe we'll close our conversation today, maybe bringing it around to COVID Chronicles, which I've been very grateful for during this time of pandemic and separation. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how it started, and if you have any plans for the podcast as we slowly emerge from COVID.
Well, it was, I think, in about May of 2020 when my phone rang one afternoon, and it was Kurt Weaver. And he said, Gloria, several of us have been talking about trying to find ways for the congregation to connect with each other while we're in the midst of not being able to meet together physically. And we thought that maybe a podcast might be a good idea. And I, at that point, almost literally jumped out of my chair, because, of course, I had been wanting to do a podcast, because to me, that was my radio program that I hadn't been able to figure out what to do. I knew about podcasts, but I was like, what am I going to do? And so I said, yes, yes, whatever it is, I'm happy to do this. And then the question was, what do you want me to talk about? What do you want us to talk about? Do you want us to talk about COVID? What do you want? Matt Newell Ching was the other person who was involved in kind of saying, maybe this is a good idea. And when I talked to him, he said, no, enough of COVID. I don't want COVID. I want to hear some stories. I just want people's stories. I want to know more about the people with whom I go to church. And I said, well, duh, it's what I do. We decided that 30 minutes seemed like a fairly decent length. And basically, I've had free rein since that day. And it's wonderful. I just took it and ran with it. We're up over 50, maybe 60 interviews. And what are my plans for the future? Well, when the service that we post them on, Podbean, came up for renewal, Kurt had said to me, Gloria, why don't you go ahead and buy that so that if at some point you just want that and COVID Chronicles doesn't exist anymore, it's yours. And I said, perfect. So when it came up for renewal this spring, I thought, we haven't talked about this, but I'm not ready to quit. So I just went ahead and renewed it. And Kurt said, that sounds good to me. And so there's been kind of a month-long hiatus because I've been gone for a while and other people are on vacation. I have a couple of people mostly lined up. So for one thing, COVID's not over with yet. So even though we're sort of meeting in person, there is still plenty of COVID around. And so at this point, I have no intention of stopping COVID Chronicles. I've had people say, please don't stop. No one's told me that I should stop. And so for right now, my plan is to just keep doing what we've been doing and kind of just see where it goes. Because there are still a lot of people that I haven't had an opportunity to talk to. And I'll just put out a call. It's been out there forever. But if you want to be part of the fun, I would love to hear from you. And if I don't hear from you, you'll probably hear from me. So yeah, things hopefully will get back on track and there'll be more.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that. I am one of those people who hopes that this continues. So thank you for doing this and for all the time that you spend having these conversations and editing them and getting them out so that we can hear a little bit more about the people we go to church with. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for stepping up and saying that you would interview me. I know some people have asked and I ramble on, as you all know, but thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Well, I really appreciate it. This has really been a lot of fun. So thank you for joining us for this special episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions, or if you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. This is David Johnson sitting in for Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.